To me, lead generation is really about capturing the interest. It's the form field, it's the attendee list, the badge scan, or the webinar registration. Like, those are the people who've raised their hand in some way. But the demand generation, to me, is bigger than that. It's about creating interest before someone's ready to raise their hand. It's the intent, it's the awareness, it's the trust, it's the education, it's the visibility over the time frame that a member and a buyer has a need. They already know who you are and why you matter, so it's a lot about presence.
Hi, I'm Christine Shaw, CEO and President of Naylor Association Solutions, and I'm your host of the Association Advisor Podcast. We'll learn from successful association executives, partners, and clients on how to grow membership engagement and non-dues revenue to create a thriving, prosperous, and value-driven association. I invite you to join me in keeping informed and, most importantly, keeping your association profitable. Our goal is to leave you feeling inspired, more confident, and more knowledgeable. This is the Association Advisor Podcast. Welcome to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. I'm your host, Christine Shaw. If you're joining us for the first time, we're excited to have you here. And if you enjoy this episode, please be sure to follow us on your favorite listening platform. Many associations treat revenue as something separate from their mission, but there's an opportunity in rethinking that role entirely. When revenue is viewed as how an association delivers value, it can reshape operations, priorities, and growth. Our guest today, John Bacon, has seen this dynamic from both sides. He spent years on the for-profit side, including at Naylor, providing services for associations. John now serves as Vice President of Sales and Partner Experiences at ASAE, where he leads revenue growth across print, digital media, sponsorships, partnerships, and events. In this conversation, we explore a shift in thinking about revenue. We discuss what it means to treat revenue as a core part of delivering member value rather than existing alongside it. I learned a lot from this conversation with John, and I'm certain you will too. So let's dive right in. Welcome, John. I am super excited to have you on this episode of the Association Advisor Podcast.
I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here. It's almost full circle for me.
It's very much full circle. I mean, right? It's coming up on 3 years when I joined Naylor, and I had the opportunity to work with you for a very short time, but I'm glad you didn't go too far from home for us, and we still get to work together.
Likewise.
I always say you're a brand, right, in this industry. Pretty much everyone knows John Bacon, but I'd love for you to tell our listeners a little about your career journey, how you got into the association space to begin with.
My career journey has really been centered around sales, partnerships, relationship building, and trying to help organizations connect their value to the people they serve. As you know, I spent about almost 16 years at Naylor Association Solutions, where I had a lot of great opportunities to grow through several roles, from project and sales management to account leadership and even vice president of account management. So that was great. So that experience really shaped, I think, my understanding of the association space, because I was working directly with hundreds of associations in many different industries across the country and helping them think through non-dues revenue, media, sponsorship, advertising, partnerships, and how to maximize member engagement. So I think that gave me a really good leg up as it relates to being able to not only understand some of the nonprofits and what they were going through, but it was really great to be able to work with certain clients. And once we found something that worked, to be able to try it with others. So I think working in different industries really helped me do that. What I loved about the work was also that associations are mission driven. That's big for me. I do a lot in my personal life in the community. So that was really huge for me. And I think also understand that associations have real business challenges. They need to generate revenue. They need to prove value. They need to engage with their members, and they need to build strong partnerships. So for me, I found that intersection of mission and business strategy really energizing. And then eventually that path led me to ASAE, where now I have the opportunity to work at the center of the association community. And so in my role, I focus on sales, strategic partnerships, a la carte sponsorships, and our organization's content strategy. And within that, trying to create better partner experiences within that. So I wholeheartedly believe that my experience at Naylor really equipped me to be able to go in and work at ASAE, but also come with a certain business acumen to really focus in on not only being able to help diversify the revenue for the organization, but also drive profitability as well.
It's interesting, John. So you are in a unique role, right? There's very few people who have sat on both sides of it the way you have. But a lot of people come from the business side, but not business specifically for associations. So having that perspective is definitely a unique view for you to go into ASAE. And what a perfect place of...
For sure.
You know, I can't think of a better organization for you to be working at, but you're right in that your knowledge from what you did there absolutely is helpful in building those partner relationships and strategic partnerships with ASAE. You know, you said something that's really important. Even though we're in the not-for-profit space and we work in that environment, revenue and profit is paramount to the success and sustainability around that. So tell me a little bit about what that felt like coming for a very for-profit environment into ASAE where you really have to approach associations on how they generate revenue and what that means for their sustainability.
It was honestly a transition of being able to make sure the word profitability felt safe.
That's a great way of putting it, John.
You know what I mean? I think when you're in a nonprofit and you're mission driven, you know, you don't want to come across as if you're focused on revenue. But quite frankly, we need that profitability to continue to do the things we want to do and to be able to serve our members effectively.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the biggest things I learned coming over to the association side from a for-profit organization was how important context was. So a lot of the departments that I worked with, it was really listening and understanding what their challenges were. It was being able to find ways to make what was important to them important to me. But also it gave me the opportunity to also give context as to what their piece of the puzzle looked like for this whole organization that we're trying to run from a revenue standpoint. I think by giving them that context and helping them understand that, it gave them the opportunity to really own what they did and how every department really could have a revenue strategy. And I think it helped to break down silos. But again, I think that context was important because it helped educate them on why I was asking what I was asking versus just asking the question. And I think it allowed people to feel safe when it came to profitability and understand like what their piece of that puzzle looked like to help the whole organization.
You know, it's interesting when you put it that way, using the word safe, right? Because profit can seem like a dirty, forbidden word in our industry. But the reality is what you articulated is the mission cannot drive forward without that revenue stream and a profitable right. revenue stream. So by doing so, you're actually supporting and helping the mission have impact. That's what we've learned. Would you agree with that?
I 100% agree with that. I think the other thing too, Christine, being inside of the association now, I do think about revenue also a little differently in a way where it's not just about selling sponsorships and exhibit space and media partnerships. It's about how all of those things connect back to the mission, the member experience, and then also the overall value that we're creating. So one of the biggest things I've learned is that revenue can't be transactional, right? It has to be intentional. And I think partners are not just looking to buy logo placements anymore. That's not what they're doing. They're not looking for one-time things. And they're looking for access and they're looking for relationships. They're looking for thought leadership, data, and opportunities that solve real problems for some of these associations, right? And so that to me is super helpful because you know, you're meeting me halfway there already. You know, these organizations that are coming to us now, they want impact and intentionality. And I appreciate that. And so now it's my job to kind of how do I help align what their goals are, you know, to align it to what we're trying to do as an organization while it still drives our mission forward. So it's a different mind shift, but it's a lot of the same things too.
Another word you used is experience, right? So now experiential is how we sell, right? So If you think about ASAE's annual, I was just on with Lori Anderson yesterday around the International Sign Association annual event. And what our audience cares about and what the association cares about is what's the member experience, not just at the annual event, but in being a member of the association. Could you touch a little bit about what you're seeing in your role and how that experience and how does experience show up for you when you're talking to people about that?
Well, I think also when you think about experience, you're thinking it's action, right? That's the things that you're doing. I always say that when you talk about customer service, I feel like customer service is the byproduct of the overall experience. And 90% of the customer service that you see or that you even deal with on a daily basis is transactional. So it's our opportunity now to say, hey, how can we build a relationship to where we can create an experience where people want to work with us? That's the value proposition. I think you can't really ignore that. I think a lot of times in the association space is just being able to take the time to really to understand the story that we're trying to tell within our membership. What problems are they actually solving? And for what audiences? And I think you have to be very clear about that, because I think there are some gaps there when you don't know that and you just assume that folks are going to continue to do what they've always done. I'm finding more and more now, especially in the last couple of years, folks are being very strategic in how they spend their dollars. And so one of the first things they cut is their membership. So how often do associations do a really good job of letting them know what those member benefits are? How often are we evaluating those member benefits to ensure that there's value there for the audiences we're trying to serve? And so I think it's just a different type of approach. And one thing that I would challenge associations to do is to really get back to the basics. I always say, don't skip steps. And to me, part of that is an evaluation process of truly understanding how your folks are consuming the content that you're pushing out. Are we assuming a lot of the things that we're doing? Or are we asking those questions? Are we making them a part of that process and then turning those folks into champions? I think that is a really big opportunity.
You know, the word assumption, you're right. It's one thing I learned a long time ago is never be a focus group of one. And what that means is you tend to be internally in your own little meetings and you're making decisions based on assumptions without actually asking or engaging. Right. You know, something Loris shared yesterday too is we tend to think of demographics, but we really need to think about value graphics, like because there's more alignment when you talk about people's values versus, you know, their age, their gender, et cetera. So I agree with that a lot, John. I think you're touching on some really important things. And it kind of leads into my next discussion point, another shift in how we think. So getting back to logos and the old tactical way we would talk about lead gen, but really you got to flip the script. People should be demanding more, right? And so how do you go from lead gen to demand generation? And I would like to have you define what that means in terms that you deal with associations on.
No, it's a great question too, because I think part of it, what you just mentioned is the education part of it, because there is a difference. To me, lead generation is really about capturing the interest. It's the form field, it's the attendee list, the badge scan or the webinar registration. Like those are the people who've raised their hand in some way, right? But the demand generation to me is bigger than that. It's about creating interest before someone's ready to raise their hand. It's the intent, it's the awareness, it's the trust, it's the education, it's the visibility over the time frame that a member and a buyer has a need, right? They already know who you are and why you matter. So it's a lot about presence. So that's the thing I really love about demand generation. I feel like demand generation over lead generation is a lot more intentional. It's a lot more targeted. And I think in the association space, and Christine, I think you would agree, I think both are very important. But sometimes I think we jump too quickly to the lead generation piece. I think we want the list, we want the contacts, we want the number of names. And that is kind of the point that folks have, all right, well, we're going to use this as our ICP or our ideal customer profile, and we're going to go from there. But I think we also now, a lot of associations, they build a lot of content. They have a lot of events. They have newsletters. They have education. They have a lot of conversations. And you can use those platforms where members are coming from to learn and solve problems. So for me, lead generation to me is the output. Demand generation is the strategy.
Exactly. Because if you think about it in terms like this, like you want to attract in the people who want to do business with you. And, you know, one moment sticks out to me. It was at ASAE. And I remember somebody in our new business team was like literally just out scanning anyone who would walk by. And it's like,
right.
And then, oh, we got this many leads today. It's like, that's not a lead because those leads are useless.
Right.
I mean, nobody wants to be scanned, right? They want a conversation and you want to generate that interest, but it starts back with what you said is the right information, the right content in the right platforms at the right time. And people start to show up to learn more versus you try to pull them in. So I think that's really important.
That's right.
So tell us a little bit about maybe some things you're seeing with associations that they're already doing well and that others could be leveraging or that associations could leverage more effectively, because you see a lot in your role.
I would say that the biggest trend that I'm seeing now, which is a great trend, is associations are already creating a lot of valuable content, whether it be webinars, articles, newsletters, conference sessions, research, podcasts, you name it. But I think associations could leverage a lot of that content more intentionally. I think we create a lot of content for the moment and then we move on to the next thing. So I think a lot of that same content could be repackaged, could be sponsored, could be turned into more of a resource hub used for lead generation. I think it also helped members solve problems throughout the year. And I think the opportunity is to stop thinking about content as a one-time deliverable and think of it as an asset, really. And I think if we already have the trust of the communities we serve, then we kind of know what our members want and what they care about. So it could be a really powerful tool.
Yeah, and I'm going to be bold about this, right? So in the age of AI, sometimes content isn't trusted, but this is where associations can play a critical role, because if it's their content, they're endorsing it, and especially if they're putting it out in multiple channels, as you discussed, people start to get some stickiness with that content and know that this is a resource that can be trusted. And I think it's a moment for associations to lean into, because that's the endorsement and the association that builds that trust and separates it from, well, how do you know if it's real or can you believe it? So I hope associations really lean into this opportunity.
I agree. I think it's low-hanging fruit, in my opinion. I think being able to take what you already have, you're not having to create something totally different outside of what your strategy already is or your vision already is, organize it better, connect it to what members need, and create opportunities for partners to support it.
I couldn't agree with you more. So tell me, we're in Q2. We all live quarter to quarter in this life. What do you see as or things we could do differently now to make an impact for the next quarter in revenue specifically?
Great question. I think it goes back to what we first started talking about, Christine. One shift as an association can make to me in the next quarter is to really get clear on where revenue is coming from and where there's untapped opportunity. It sounds simple, I will say, but I do think a lot of associations, they don't have a shared view of revenue across the organization. I think it's very siloed. You got events looking at one number, sponsorship, maybe looking at another one, membership, education, they're all looking at and tracking things differently. So I think the first shift is the visibility piece, Christine. Build a simple revenue dashboard, whatever that looks like, to be able to see, like, you know, what do we have in the pipeline overall? What is at risk? What's performing well? Where are the gaps? Like, who's communicating with the same audience?
Yeah.
And I think once you have that, you can make better decisions. So for me, you don't need to create new products in one quarter, because that's the other thing too. We really get caught up in our products and trying to do things a little bit differently, which is a great thing, but we just need to connect the dots around what we already have and what's already selling and where those strongest opportunities are. And again, that's low-hanging fruit.
We're doing more and more of that at Nailer too. We call it full kit. We do much better with our association partners when we're working with them holistically across solutions, right? Because to your point, that's where we can figure out where the opportunity exists, where the crossover is, and it's more powerful when you operate that way. So I think that's a great message to get out to association leaders, is don't operate revenue in vacuums, pull those teams together, create those dashboards and forward-looking approach. Do you see anything different on the horizon when it comes to revenue that will, I mean, you're familiar with our benchmarking report. So if you were to have a crystal ball, what would you say is going to be different this year that might have not shown up in prior years?
I think you're going to continue to see associations evolve from selling inventory to selling value in outcomes. Mm-hmm. You have some associations that have done this very well and that have kind of looked for those things proactively, and you're going to have some that are going to learn the hard way. But if I was to give my advice on looking ahead on what that looks like, again, being able to focus less on inventory and more on the value proposition and what those outcomes look like.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. Like, what's the value proposition? And, you know, don't just rinse and repeat. Mm-hmm. And I think it goes back to your first point about revenue dashboards and bringing that all together. So I know you are in the throes of ASAE annual planning and all the things. Anything exciting we can look forward to?
Well, I think it kind of goes back to just even some of the conversation that we're having already. I think I really appreciate and value the trust that Michelle puts in me and our team to really try things, you know? And I think what you can expect is just continuing to find ways to really focus in on the attendee experience. I think the my team has done a really good job of making that the priority versus just selling a sponsorship, selling a booth. We focus on what that member experience is when they're on site with us, because I think once we focus on that, it's going to help us better align industry partners to those attendees. So that's been our focus. And so, yeah, so I love annual meeting. We always, you know, refer to it as the Super Bowl of meetings. And I think there will be no less than that. I think Indianapolis has already done a tremendous job in really wanting to make this a really cool event. Indianapolis is really cool to be at. It's definitely one of the nicest, you know, nicest convention cities in the country. And I think I'm excited to have, you know, a lot of attendees come and share some of that excitement with us. But it has been a daily thing, a lot of planning. And also being super intentional about it. We got a lot of things going on at the same time. And we just wanted to be really valuable for the people that show up.
Yeah, I mean, nothing like throwing in a new corporate headquarters, opening that up months before your Super Bowl, plus all the other initiatives you have going on at ASAE. But I will tell you, experiential. I mean, Michelle, the entire team at ASAE, I've been to several of your events, even the CEO Conclave, and it is. It sets you apart because you do feel that experience. One of the things I look forward to every year is the opening keynote, because I don't know how you do it, but you all pick the best keynotes year after year. And you do, you walk away with an emotional feeling that you cannot make happen. Like, that's just by that experiential. And it's, you step away and that stays with you for a long, long time. So I'm super excited. I can't wait to see who's going to be, you know.
I'm excited to see it all come together. I think, you know, doing a lot of the planning and working with the team on kind of what it, you have an idea of what you want it to be. And then you get on site to kind of see it all start to come together. So that's always the interesting part for me, is being able to kind of like work behind the scenes, kind of see what's happening, what are we planning, how we put this together, how are we trying new things? You know, for example, I know last year we did Rebook on site for the first time. But because of how much planning that went into it, it felt like we had been doing it for years, you know? And so we found a lot of really great success in doing that. So just trying new things where it just makes things more effective and efficient, even for the folks that attend, exhibit, and sponsor. So I'm super excited to see how it shakes out this year.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to be there with you. So John, you have a lot of experience as we went through. So give our listeners access to some of your recommendations and resources. What would you recommend to people out there?
One thing I was thinking about, there's two people I've been getting a lot of inspiration from lately on revenue strategy, and that's Lori Zoss and Carrie McIntyre. If you're trying to figure out kind of revenue diversification or need a simple and digestible way to start the process, I think both of them make the topic really approachable. So I've been kind of following them a lot, and I talk to them occasionally, and it's just nice to have folks, you know. And also too, like, I obviously talk to you a lot. I talk to my friends at Naylor a lot, and we just kind of be able to bounce ideas off of each other. One, if you don't mind, I will definitely put a plug in. I think we have a lot of great revenue topics on our ASAE Academy as well. So I think there's a lot there for our members to be able to. So if you're not a member of ASAE, I would definitely look into it. There's a lot of really nice free resources, especially around this topic. I mean, obviously, you know, Naylor's a strategic partner of ours. And I think that's been the full circle moment for me, and being able to be at Naylor for 16 years. And I believe in the vision that we have at Naylor Association Solutions. I still feel like I'm a part of the team.
We still feel like you are too, John.
And I appreciate that. I really do. And I know the work that you all do, because I've been there. And really, I love the fact that I've been able to be at ASAE and almost be that conduit for industry partners and associations, because I know what both sides look like. And it's really nice to be able to come in and be able to know that we want almost the same things as the associations do. We want them to be successful. And I think this is why I appreciate these types of platforms too, Christine.
Yeah, you're really good at sharing your knowledge and your perspective. And we appreciate that too, because like I said, there's not very many people who've walked in both sides of this and in your shoes. And so being able to share that information is super valuable. So, John, I already know how our listeners can stay in touch with you, because I follow you obsessively on LinkedIn. But anything else you could advise? Is that the best way to keep in touch?
Yeah, no, I would say LinkedIn would be the best social platform for me. And Christine, you already know it, but revenue is my jam. I really enjoy talking about it. I really enjoy making a difference. I appreciate you for giving me the opportunity to have this conversation with you too. I was super excited to be a part of this.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your time and your knowledge. And again, we're really looking forward to annual meeting and can't wait to see you there. So that's a wrap for today. Thanks, John.
Thanks so much, Christine.
Thank you for listening to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. To learn more strategies for growing your association's revenue, subscribe to the Association Advisor newsletter at the link in the show notes, or visit us at associationadvisor.com and click subscribe. Don't forget to follow us on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, so you won't miss an episode. We will see you on the next show.